Morning, everyone. It's 9 minutes, 2 minutes after 9 on March 2nd. Welcome to Senate Finance. I'm joined this morning by Senators Bundy, Hoffman, Olson, Senators Dyson, Stedman, and Co-Chair Green. Myself, Senator Wilkin. Purpose of today's meeting is to have a discussion about double fast track supplemental. And we'll do that primarily around the Marine Highway system. And then we'll change chairs, and Senator Green will chair a hearing on Senate Bill 243, Tobacco Revenue for University and Corrections Facilities. And we have till 11 today, if we need that much time. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing none. The status of the committee substitute for the Senate Bill 232. It's about done. There's one major piece missing. That's Marine Highway. We're going to talk about that today. But other than that, we won't have any discussions. I expect that we'll have it done tomorrow, most likely Monday. Cheryl, so we don't have any other discussions today. So I don't know how many folks are here today on things other than Marine Highway. But that'll be the extent of our discussions, unless somebody from the committee has something else. We've been working through it, and there's an obvious hole as to what we're going to do with the large amounts for the Marine Highway, so we wanted to spend some time on that this morning. So, Cheryl, anything we can add to that? Okay, so just stand by. It'll be the next day or two, but we're pretty close. And we understand, we very much understand the import of some of the timing issues. And so thank you for keeping that in front of us, and I think we're listening, and so we'll have something in the next couple of days. So with that, other than Marine Highway, anything else on the committee substitute for the double fast track? Okay. Let's see. Let's ask Deputy Director Taylor to come to the table. Anybody else that you'd like to have join us? Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
I'm Robin Taylor, Deputy Commissioner, Alaska Marine Highway System, and with me is Nancy Slagle.
Morning, Robin. Morning, Nancy. Let me preface our conversation, if I could. As we've worked through the supplemental, we're aware of the timing issues with your funding in March. So having said that, but the people that have been involved in the meetings, folks on the House side and our side, I'll just be straight up. I don't know whether we should give you a dollar or $100 million. I don't know. And I know that you're going to have a meeting on Tuesday with Joint Senate House Transportation, because I think they're in sort of the same spot. What are we going to do? And there's lots of moving parts, and it's a lot of money, $82 million. So we thought it would be appropriate, Robin, if you just came today and for the want of a better word, sell it. And we've got, in 06, we've got almost $15 million in supplemental requests. We've talked a little bit about that at the table. And then in moving forward to 07, we've got about almost $19 million in new requests. And some of that is fuel, and some of that is service. And I mean, I look at it as a guy from Fairbanks, and I don't know where we should be, and rather than just make wild guesses, we need some help from you. And I think not only this table, but the other table, and I think that the transportation needs some help. I think we're all struggling with a lot of the things that you're struggling with. In the CS, when it comes out, you'll see $1 million placeholder that is there simply as a placeholder. We'll arrive at some number working with you and with the other bodies, and we can take care of that through the amendment process. So when you see the million, don't get too concerned about it. We know that that's a piece that has to be refined a bit, and I think that refining starts here today. Certainly for me to help, and Senator Green and others that have just sort of scratched their heads and said, where do we go from here? I mean, it's sort of you brought us to sort of a crossroads, and I think it's more than just throwing money at it. So, with that, I've asked Deputy Director Taylor to be here today, share some thoughts, sell this program as we move on. And we'll have a couple of bites. We'll have this double fast track and then, of course, the supplemental and the operating budget. So, with that, anything else to preface a presentation by the Marine Highway System? Okay. With that, Robin, if you would, please help us out.
Well, let me first say that you're not the only ones that are struggling. This entire system has a system in transition for the last several years, but it's been a halting process, one step forward and almost two steps back. Without, I think, good, clear direction, either from the legislative or the executive body, for that matter, if you stretch us back over the last 10 to 12 years. Approximately 1993, we started increasing revenues to try and make up for costs, by, I should say, increasing fares, and in that hope that we would generate more revenue and continue to operate basically the same system. Unfortunately, by increasing the cost of riding on this system, we started seeing a significant decline in ridership. In 93, we carried well over 400,000 passengers. This last year, you carried about 296,000. We lost well over 106,000 riders in a 10 or 11 year period of time. No other transportation system, by the way, has seen that statistic. Last year, when I assumed this seat, we had increased fares by 17%. For the first time in the history of Alaska Marine Highway System, last year, we not only lost at least that number in ridership, we even lost revenue last year. In previous years, though, ridership was going down because revenue was going, or fares were going up at a higher rate, you actually saw small increases in revenue occurring, even though you were carrying fewer cars and fewer passengers. The transition that I speak of is a mindset. If you look back at the Southeast Alaska transportation plans, each of those have called for incremental development of small road segments that would allow us to run from roadhead to roadhead instead of from city to city. Our longest runs internal in Southeast Alaska today are runs like Petersburg over to Sitka, which is about 170 miles. Juneau down to Sitka, 160 some miles. These runs on a normal displacement haul boat are 10-hour runs. You just can't make it in any less than that. And in fact, if you have to wait for tides, it's even worse. So to get around that, there's been lots of daydreaming done about where a road might be built, and people put that into plans, but nobody ever initiated the process. And during the previous administration, there was a very strong philosophy, if you will, not to build any roads. And the opportunity to then improve your system left you with only one technology available, and that was to go into what was seen at that time, if you drop back 6-7 years ago, as the new modem within marine transportation, and that was to go to some type of high-speed vessel, a catamaran, a swath hull. Bill Ray tried this, by the way, when I first came to the legislature in the summer of 1986 and brought a Boeing hydrofoil up here. They spent $3.5 million driving that thing around and found they couldn't afford to carry passengers on it either. But because there was a strong desire not to build any roads, they moved into this transition, and we purchased two high-speed vessels, both of which were delivered over the last couple of years. And what we have found is that, unfortunately, these vessels do not perform very well in our winter weather. We all have enjoyed the last beautiful 3 days here in Juneau. For the last 3 days, your older boat, the Lakani, has been bumping its way around to the villages, as it does on a regular basis. And each day we would call in to find out what are the waves like out there. Well, for the last 3 days, the Chiniga has not been able to operate because of sea states in Lynn Canal, one of our more sheltered waterways. In fact, it didn't even leave the dock the last 2 days because wave heights would have prevented it from running. Today, we at least tried it. We were only seeing about 5-6 foot waves out at Lena Point and thought we might be able to make it. I just got a phone call 5 minutes before I walked in here. That boat turned around again today. Now, did that reduce any of our costs? Of course not. We're paying that full crew. We're paying the full maintenance. And interestingly, when they call ahead to find out what the weather's like, they're calling one of your old boats that is running and is going 16, 17 knots to make it from point to point. I only raise that as an analogy, Mr. Chairman, because you've got a displacement hauled fleet that is aging. Some of our boats are 43 years old now. They run 24 hours a day. The only time they get to rest is when you stick them in a yard and try to make some changes in them. So you've got that fleet operating. You've now got this new transition system we were trying to move into, and for the last 5 years, the majority of all of our funding has gone into not only building those boats, but building terminals that would be modified to fit those boats. Overall investment is probably $150 million just for that concept. Now, that concept may work in the summers. It certainly is not going to work in the winter, where you can't operate a boat because of weather, because of sucking up logs as we did in Ketchikan, and because of high costs and low ridership. The system needs to have some very short road extensions, a few new terminals built, and you need to develop shuttle ferries. This isn't something new that I'm presenting. This has been presented in every single Southeast transportation plan for the last 15, 20 years. Sadly, we didn't have anybody willing to carry that out. So we're left stuck, Mr. Chairman, halfway between an existing fleet, a new configuration of that fleet or some other fleet, and you're at probably the most expensive period you'll ever see in this marine highway system, because you're going to have to maintain your old boats while you bring new ones on. And the new boats you probably need to bring on are shuttle vessels of a normal looking ferry configuration that are tough enough, big enough to go back and forth on short runs. I think that the Lituya has now proven to us, as has the inter-island ferry operation, that these shuttle vessel systems do work and work very efficiently compared to the one we're operating. The shuttle boat Lituya operating just between Metlakatla and Ketchikan, doing two round trips a day, right now has been running at about a 90% cash box ratio. So it's bringing in $9 for the $10 that it costs to operate. You don't have a vessel in the fleet that even comes close to that. The best we can do in the summertime is Columbia, which actually will make a little bit of money. I believe I can configure and put the Fairweather and the Chiniga on two runs this summer that'll actually show at least paying for their cost, maybe even a little bit better. I don't believe I can do that in the wintertime. Now, by dropping fares, because when I came on board, it was obvious we were losing money and losing people faster than we could gain them. So we put into place a whole series of special deals and cut the price to Pelican by 50%. And a boat that had for 10 years historically carried on average 10 people. Our first trip we carried 142. The next trip we were at 195. We stayed at around 195 to 200 for each trip for the rest of that season. We took revenue, total revenue, from $1,000 a trip to about $13,000 a trip on that boat. So we made some progress, and we cut rates in Cordova and Prince William Sound, and we saw a significant increase of volume that flowed in and out of Cordova last summer, more than double what they'd ever seen before, which was both helpful to that economy and helpful to our system. But you can only do so much of that, so many of those things. There is good news within this system, and that is that by dropping the rates 30% on a round-trip fare, which primarily was targeted at Alaskans, because they were the ones that would need a round-trip fare, we had full sailings on the Columbia coming out of Bellingham for most of January, February, And we have already totally sold out the car deck space on Columbia coming out of Bellingham for all of the month of March, and we've only got about 20% left for the month of April. Now, this has never happened before, that we've had full car deck loads coming up, coming north in the wintertime. And so we think we're turning some of these corners, Mr. Chairman, and we're excited about that. We really appreciate the legislature last year giving this system an additional $500,000 so that we went and hired Bradley Reed. We have a marketing specialist, and every time we can find a what we would call empty inventory, a boat that's sailing and it's only half full or a quarter full, we have a new and revised web page, and a lot of people are now using our web page to book reservations. We find that we can discount those fares and actually see a response, a pretty quick response from the public. And we're doing that both this spring on certain specials we just started advertising on, kind of early bird specials, you know. We're doing each of those things. But the bottom line, the systemic line, is still the same. You have a series of old boats. You have some new, very expensive boats. And we can't control the price of fuel. We were budgeted last year at less than $1.14 a gallon. That's because you were using older numbers coming out of the year before and the year before that to base a budget off of, so you had the system operating at about 10.3 million gallons. In actuality, we burned about 13.5. Not only did we burn about 30% more, but the price of fuel wasn't $1.10 or $1.14. We were paying as high as $2.65 last summer. We're down to about 205 right now. There was a slight decrease, and these things have dramatic impacts as they occur. We're hopeful that we will get on through this this year, somewhere between the 220 figure and the 210. But again, we have no control over that. And then people say, well, gee, you can sure control the routes. Why don't you just shut down some of those expensive boats? The cost of shutting them down with the union contracts that we currently have, if you can generate even its normal winter revenue, and right now we're 48% above that rate, even with the 30% discount, Mr. Chairman, we're showing system-wide 18% net increase in overall revenue for winter service, and we're very proud of that number. But you literally get to the point where when you start penciling it out, it's probably cheaper to operate the boat than it is to tie the boat up, because the boat is so expensive to tie up. You have to keep a crew on board, you have to have line handlers, a captain. I mean, there's a whole series of expenses. And you figure that out, and then you figure out, well, how much revenue do you lose? And you're better off in most instances to operate the boat. In fact, right now, I would not be operating the Chiniga but for the fact that if that boat is to operate this summer, as we promised the people of Prince William Sound and as we promised the people of Southeast, if those boats are to operate this summer, they have to have two full-time crews. Just training crews is very expensive on these boats. It was estimated it would cost us $500,000. In fact, it cost us $3.2 million to do the training to date on these two boats. We have to make 12 empty runs on each route. To be certified, to have the crew members certified by the Coast Guard. That's over $10,000 a day for fuel just on those empty runs. So that's $120,000 just fuel cost. So very quickly you end up with very high expenses. The only reason, as I started to say, we're operating Chiniga right now is so it will continue to provide proficiency for existing crews, and we can move crews in there for additional training. We're hopeful of getting the Fairweather out of the shipyard sometime in early April. Three of its engines are undergoing extensive repairs, and they have found difficulties, and I'm not enough of a mechanic to give you a good rundown on that, Mr. Chairman, but the reduction gears also have major problems. So if the prediction is, and they're working 12-hour shifts, they brought people out of Germany to try and repair these engines because that's where they were built. They're hopeful they can make our April 8th deadline when that boat has to run north. It has to get back up here so Chiniga can be freed up to get up to Prince William Sound in time for us to hire one more full crew, that's 17 people additional, to go to Cordova and to be trained on that boat so it can initiate revenue service in early May. I've talked too long and probably too much at random here about your initial question, but to get back to where do we go from here, Mr. Chairman, we have been working, and from what I can tell, there's been very little coordination in the past between the highways portion of Department of Transportation and marine highways. They almost operated in two different worlds. I've been very blessed to have Mike Barton, Mal Menzies, Pat Kemp, and the great staff out there at Highways. We have really been struggling over the last 3-4 months to try to develop federal contracts on roads to get those EISs initiated so that we can build, as an example, 1.2 miles of road at the lower end of Wrangell Island to get to Fool's Inlet. To put in a ferry terminal that would allow a day boat shuttle to operate out of Ketchikan. We really need to have the Juneau access issue resolved and to have a temporary ferry terminal in Berners Bay. That cuts in more than in half our operating cost and time to operate between here and Haines, which is our biggest volume of traffic. To give you an example, Mr. Chairman, I'm now in the summer months, we are running well over 320 full-time employees on vessels going up and down Lynn Canal. All of that traffic could probably be handled easily by two small shuttle ferries, one operating between Haines and Skagway, the other one operating between Haines and a port at Berners Bay, which is the end of your existing road, the Berners Bay to Haines boat would make two round trips a day in a 12-hour work day, and the crew could go home at night and not have to live on board the boat. You'd probably end up with total crewing of maybe 40 or 50 people, and that would be including maintenance folks and all the rest of it, and standby folks, to operate that entire system.
Rather than 300?
Rather than 300, and instead of operating 400-foot boats, you'd probably be operating 250-foot boats that carried a couple hundred or 100 and some cars. And 100-car capacity would be wonderful. It could make two round trips, and 100-car capacity is bigger than every one of your boats except for the Columbia. Columbia carries about 130. So you could literally bring in a boat from Bellingham or from Petersburg or whatever and turn that boat around in Juneau and have it one group drive on, drive off and drive right on another boat, make a connection and move up and down the canal. Just like the Lituya is doing for you right now, every day, just like the IFA ferry is doing out of Hollis, bringing people every day. They can set their watch by when that ferry leaves.
And the Lituya travels where?
Just between Metlakatla and Ketchikan. Probably one of the poorest, most highly unemployed communities in all of Southeast Alaska, and that thing's running almost full car decks every single trip. And that's because we discounted the fare by 30%, and there's the driver goes free program in the wintertime, and you start looking at walk-on, and you can drive your car on, and it's cheaper to drive your car on and use it in Ketchikan than it is to walk on and hire a cab. Well, people are pretty sensitive to that kind of number, and they're using it. And we firmly believe that that as we initiate a shuttle system in Southeast Alaska, we're going to see significant efficiencies start occurring. This is a program that Senator Torgerson and I tried to implement in 1999, and they refused to move forward on any of it. So we've lost all that time, and we need now to implement that type of program. We have been working very closely with the Marine Transportation Advisory Board. We went through 2 days with them just last week where we did a full day of visioning on where is this system going, how are we going to get there. We then met with them formally and went through the same business type processes the next day, so we got in 2 days there. I think we're coming closer to a plan that will work. I brought some rough stuff with me today, but it's far too detailed for probably what you want to go into. But I believe there is a bright horizon out there because we're going to let a contract this spring for a shuttle vessel. I've already got the RFP supposed to go on the street here in the next couple days to hire the consultant to get us our first boat built. So that I probably can't put it any more bluntly than this. It makes absolutely no sense to have a boat that's got 60-some crew members on it going into a village with less than 35 people. And we are actually doing that kind of stuff right now. And politically, I don't know what the appropriate level of essential service is. I can't set that. It just kind of gets set by pressures being brought on this system. The senator had a question.
Take a breath just for a second. Senator Dyson, you had a question?
Yeah, thanks, Robin. I really appreciate the thoughts you're putting into this.
Senator Dyson, get a little closer to that microphone.
Yeah, thank you. I don't remember what the number was, 100,000 riders that you've lost I'm concerned about, as you are, the Alaskans. Are those folks flying or not traveling? Do you have any sense of that?
The sense we have, they're not only flying, they're also driving. And they're not driving in and out of Southeast Alaska, of course. What they're doing is the Canadians have vastly improved what's called the Cassiar Highway or Highway 37 in British Columbia. They put over $40 million into that road just a couple years ago. It took out a lot of the tight corners and that kind of stuff. And today, if you swing off of Kitwanga and head north, you've got a beautiful paved road that you drive all the way in, whether you're heading to Fairbanks or heading to Whitehorse or Skagway. And people who are actually need to use our ferry system are taking that road, coming up around, and they're coming in through either Haines or Skagway and entering our marine highway system from that point and then coming into Juneau or coming down to, say, Sitka. It's less expensive to go that way. Let me give you one quick analogy on cost.
Before you do that, yes. Let's do a couple of things. We've been joined by Commissioner Barton. Barton, thank you, sir, for being here today. And also online, as an off-net, we have Richard Leary. And Richard, we're going to get to you here in just a moment. So go ahead, please.
I just wanted to let you know how dramatic these cost increases have been for fares. My mother and sister said they wanted to come up and visit this summer. I thought, wonderful, get them up here to Juneau. Why don't you take the ferry? Okay, so they were going to leave from Bellingham, come up to Juneau, just two ladies, and then go back the same way. So they wanted a two-berth stateroom. That's the smallest one you can get. And so I called up and made reservations, and then I asked, by the way, what's the price? It was $1,940. Now, that does not include meals. So I figured, well, I've got the two of them on board the boat for a little over 6 days. That's probably going to cost minimum $100 a day to feed the two of them. So now I'm at $2,540. So Mary Soroki and I then got on the computer. She was doing the program. I don't work them that good. And we checked out what it would cost to come up with, say, on the Norwegian Sun, a beautiful tour ship that comes into Juneau, or come up on one of Holland America's boats. It was $1,000 cheaper to bring them to Alaska and back to Vancouver for a week, and they'd get to see Glacier Bay and a lot of things probably more fun to see than me, and get fed. And it was $1,000 cheaper. And that wasn't the cheapest room. This is no longer a poor man's tour ship. The people that are riding our boats are desperate because they can't get from point A to point B any other way. Because if they can get that from one point to another some other way, as you said, are they flying? Yeah, they're flying. Are they using barges and vans to ship cars and stuff in? You bet. So yes, the bottom line is we lost that ridership. We're desperately trying to bring it back, and I think we have to bring it back for this system to be justified by this legislature.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, just one other, kind of back of the envelope. What percentage of your operating costs is labor?
I'd have to turn to Dick on that.
Richard, welcome to Senate Finance. You want to answer that, and just let me know when you'd like to make some prepared comments, if you would. But help Senator Dyson with the labor question, please.
The labor component, which is comprised of wages and all the add-on benefits, is about 64% of the total dollars spent by the Marine Highway.
Richard, would you, just for housekeeping, identify yourself and whom you represent?
My name is Richard Leary, and I'm the Business Development Manager for Alaska Marine Highway.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And the answer, I think, was it 60%?
64.
Okay. Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think it's worth noting that this system of ours did not have a business manager position prior to the first part of July when we were able to hire Mr. Leary. That's a position you created last year. Our system of accounting internally has been totally restructured by Mr. Leary. We are now implementing some of the things that had been started 4, 5, 6 years before. One of the most important on the question, directly to the question that Senator Dyson raised, is how are we going to do our dispatch? Senator Torgerson, while working out there as a special assistant last year, did a study on Marine Highway overtime. As a business person, you can appreciate how dramatic these numbers are. At that time, our overtime was running 22.5% of total payroll. I believe it is significantly higher than that right now. And that's because of our operations of the vessel, and we've had significant retirements. We happen to hit a generational thing where a lot of people are leaving. And we've had to hire a bunch of folks. And if you couldn't hire somebody for the position, you couldn't let the guy off for his week off. So you paid him full time to keep the boat. There were several times this last year where, but for one person, that boat could not have sailed. And we were literally pulling people back off their vacation times and other things to keep boats operating because we were short a crew. But what we have implemented now, and finally, just this last week, signed the contract on. I could tell you, I knew things would move slow in an agency. Believe me, I had no idea how much that could impact things. But we've got that contract out. It has been let. We have a fine group of people that are going to come in, and we will have a computerized dispatch program that will take into consideration, you know, are you pulling somebody back off of their vacation? And it's beneficial, I should also add this, to our employees. They'll finally be able to count on when they can go do something. We've been yanking people around and working them extra hours now for a long, long time, and it's really hard on them and it's hard on their families. The benefit is they get some extra overtime, but after a while, you know, after 6, 8 weeks out on that boat without a day off, it gets a little old, and this computerized system will start dispatching on a quarterly basis, so at least 3 months in advance they can know where they're going to be working and for how long and what time they're actually going to have off. We think it's going to have a significant impact on our overtime and maybe bring down that 64% number a bit.
Okay. Mr. Leary, did you have some prepared comments to help us with, or are you there for questions only?
Mr. Chairman, I was just here for questions only.
Okay, thanks for joining us this morning. Let's see, questions of the Marine Highway System. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when we delve into this quagmire, it gets deep and complex and has been running for years. And one of the things we need to remember is it's a very critical piece of infrastructure and transportation in coastal Alaska. So we need to make sure we have a long-term viability in this transportation system and support it. But with that being said, we still have the responsibility of prudently watching over the state resources. And the Marine Highway System is challenged in numerous ways. One of the other issues that we haven't delved into is scheduling. We can do that at another time, but I'd like to have a little bit of comment on the two fast ferries. And I recall when when the process went through of the design and the roadshow around the coastal communities of the benefit of these fast ferries, that they were going to improve the service, and they were going to be able to run in Lynn Canal, which it always blows at Elder Rock. I don't know if you ever listen to weather reports. It either blows or it blows harder. And then you've got the logs in Clarence Straits, and you've got the ice in Stevens Passage. So these are not easy waters to transverse on thin-skinned hulls at high speeds. And I was just wondering if we can get some comments on the design speeds and wave heights versus the actual running conditions that these vessels have to be in now. I've got several more, but I think this is some important information to have on the table as we struggle with this.
Let's start with that then.
I'll try to be as brief as I can. I know there are other subjects you want to get into too here, but as you know, I opposed those for years within this body and was not successful. So it's more than ironic that I find myself in this chair today, trying to, as best we can, do due diligence on these vessels, because that was required both within the Southeast transportation plans and also by the legislature. We were facing a decision, in fact, this March, because there was an alleged option agreement within the contract that would have allowed us to purchase two more. And the question that I was tasked with was by the administration was they wanted a report. They wanted to know exactly what things were costing, how well they were performing. MTAB had asked for exactly the same thing from my predecessor, and so we had started to keep some records, and we have kind of finalized that now. And it is a limited run. I mean, we haven't had a real in-depth experience on each run with each boat. That would take a couple more years to probably really give you some finality to those answers. But I've been committed to the fact that we have spent, as I said, over $150 million on this experiment. And for crying out loud, let's do everything we can to make it work. Whether I liked the idea or not was kind of irrelevant. The people have invested a huge amount, and let's see where we can place those boats so they'll work the very best within our system. I think that's still an evolving question. Our experiences so far have not been really good in some areas. I think they can perform if you give them a short enough run, a high enough volume of people, and you can charge a fair enough price. I think those boats can operate in the summer on our heavier runs, and that's in essence what they've kind of gravitated to now. Fair weather scheduled to operate out of Juneau 7 days a week. It'll be making a couple, three trips to Sitka, and it'll be making the rest of the trips up and down in Canal like a hockey puck, you know. But we're hoping that's going to work out well. But our experience so far when it comes to cost, maintenance, the ability of the vessels to endure sea states, we have done structural damage on both boats. It was written up a year or so ago about the Fairweather bashing her nose in out here on some waves coming down Lynn Canal. Fortunately, Chenega hadn't got out of the yard yet, so they reinforced the nose of Chenega to make sure that it would have greater structural strength in that area. Unfortunately, because of waves hitting up underneath the middle of the boat, it's a catamaran style on Chenega, we actually bent some heavy frames within Chenega. We found those, reported it to the Coast Guard, and they allowed us to wait until this yard time in January to fix those. When Chenega went in, those repairs were made. We took care of Chenega first, got it back on the run, because 2 days before the Fairweather went into the yard, our maintenance crews started noticing water in the pistons and in the cylinders of three of the four engines. As you'll remember, one of the engines in Fairweather was ruined when a bolt came out of a piece of shrouding and went down through the engine. under warranty, they replaced that engine, and of course, the manufacturer, MTU, took that engine back to Germany, where they tore the whole thing down, really checked it out. And as they did, they ordered us to change the coolant we were using. Seemed kind of bizarre to me. I didn't know coolant could have that great of an effect, but apparently it does. And the coolant that was in there was having a corrosive effect around on the block near the top of the cylinder liners. They're aluminum blocks with steel liners. And they thought that was the first problem for leakage of water coming in. Well, when they discovered that, the coolant was starting to have that effect, the manufacturer ordered us to change out coolant, but didn't tell us why. A year later, roughly, we go to put Fairweather in the yard, and we start discovering water in pistons. When we pulled the heads, we found corrosion around the tops of where those liners meet that aluminum block. The manufacturer then brought over from Germany, I've met the young man, one of their top mechanics, and a boring machine, and they're in the process of boring out each of those. These are V16 engines, and they say it's going to take a day or two per cylinder just to bore them. We're not sure that first boring has worked, by the way, either. At the same time, they discovered cracks in the gears within the gearboxes on the reduction gears. And we don't know yet how extensive that difficulty may be. The manufacturer of those gearboxes is also German. They are also in Ketchikan, as I speak, working on those items. So maintenance, and furthermore, you guys bought two new boats. You didn't buy a boat with rebuilt engines, and that's what you're going to end up with. The estimated cost just of relining these engines is about $600,000in labor, and then they won't tell us yet what the parts are, but you're probably looking at well over $750,000 to rebuild those engines. So we are facing major maintenance concerns, major operational costs. The fuel cost alone is very high, and some have argued in the press that, well, yeah, but you're going twice as fast. So as a consequence, fuel's the same on that boat as it is on one of your slower boats. Well, that's not true. Fuel on a slower boat is about 27%, I believe. Fuel on the high-speed boat's 37%. So it's a much bigger percentage. And the more you operate it and the further you drive it, the more fuel you're burning. We're burning right at 600 gallons an hour. You go to and from Sitka, that's $10,000 for fuel per day. You have to carry a lot of people if you're going to offset that kind of a high operating cost. Plus, you have a maintenance crew who works all night. I've gone on too long. Bottom line is, I think we can find a way to make them work in the summer on shorter runs.
And your average speed isn't, over the trip, isn't double.
Yes, yes.
Is the work a warranty work that's being done? The boring and the sleeve work?
Interestingly, on the Fairweather, we had quite a discussion. At first, I went through risk management because the manufacturer didn't think that they were responsible since it was past the warranty period. And we suggested to them that no, we felt that it was a fitness for particular use and that their warranty was on those engines was, they weren't supposed to fail at the end of a year, so a year and a half. So as a consequence, they have agreed to go forward, MTU has, to do all the repairs necessary. That agreement, by the way, we have not reached on the reduction gear people. We're still discussing that with them.
Okay, thank you. Senator Stebbins.
If I could, and I'll
go ahead. Before you do that, can we do a little housekeeping? We stand at ease, please. How much time do you want?
There. I think my
previous... Just 1 second. The purpose of today's meeting is to hear from you in the Marine Highway System. So we have until 11 o'clock. So we want to get as much done as we can within that. And we can move 243 to another day. And Senator Green has said that would be okay with her. So it's important that we understand this. And so let's try to get all of our questions out. Robin, I know it's, I know you want to talk, but just keep it nice and tight so we get everything done. And let's then go back to Senator Stedman.
I think we'll leave that, if we could, Mr. Chairman, the issue of the design criteria that these boats were supposed to operate under and the actual. I think it is of concern when we have a day like today when the boat's tied to the dock because of weather conditions. And that's something that, we leave for another day. The and I recognize there's wind on sunny days, clear days. But if there was a document, and the newspaper, Mr. Chairman, quoted some document that was showing the gross revenue in the summer versus gross in the winter versus cost versus the percent of what your costs are covered by your sales, and I'm wondering if we could possibly see some of that information. And I think they had it broken down per boat. They were using some number like 17% of the operational costs, or depending on the boat, on the fair weather boat, or upwards of into the towards 60 for the mono hulls. And no, I think it's important, no matter how difficult or unattractive a situation we're faced at this table is, that we have as much information as possible to help us make the best decision we can under difficult circumstances. And I think there's some of that information. I think that would be beneficial. The issue of the fast ferries being a substantial cash draw on the system, I think the Senator Taylor has talked about that. But the LeConte, which is, you know, the ship that had a mishap here a while back, and we fixed up. But my understanding is that is also a lost leader in the monohull areas. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if we could get a few comments on that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we can get you numbers now on each one of the boats on a cost per week. We can also give you numbers on what their revenue has been on a weekly basis for the last year. Off the top of my head, and Dick's available to correct this if I make a too gross an error here, but just for ballpark purposes, your two high speeds are going to run better than $250,000 a week to operate, at roughly $1 million a month. Now that depends on whether you load in and how far do you spread out cost of training. You can imagine a $3.2 million bill loaded in on top dramatically impacts. So you'll see, we could, if we load that number in, the number gets as high as $278,000 for a week's operation. If you back that number out and assume you're going to have those employees there for 5-10 years, and you kind of amortize that a little further, you may be looking as low as $220,000-$230,000 a week. Even so, ballpark, you're going to be sitting somewhere in the neighborhood, for my purposes, kind of crude, about $250,000 a week. Now, what's the revenue you're generating? Well, Chenega generated $10,000 a week coming out of Ketchikan. And people said, oh, you put it on the wrong run. You know, by golly, if you'd have put it on a different run. So I said, well, okay, fine. What run do you suggest? Between Ketchikan and Juneau, you got 60,000 people living on isolated islands that have no other way to get on and off of them. I don't know where I've got that bigger crowd that needs to move anyplace else in the state. So that's where we put it, and we were hoping southeast weather would be a little better. And by the way, the big question we had to answer was, do you buy two more of these things? Do you spend another $100 million? Because the boat we were supposed to decide to buy here in March was going to go on the run between Petersburg and Ketchikan. That's the run where in 29 days we sucked up 14 logs. We were running 50% of the time. We were sucking a log into those engines. We turned that boat around and tied it up at the dock. Two different nights, we tied it up in Wrangell with a bunch of passengers on board, so we had to put those people up in hotel rooms because it was too rough to run the boat without doing damage to the boat or risking life safety. The design question Senator Stedman asked, when these boats arrived here, they were designed and to be operated in 13-foot seas, up to 13-foot seas. In point of fact, our Coast Guard requirement, or COI as it's called today, if the waves reach above 10 feet, we are ordered to run to shelter. That makes a dramatic difference in southeast operations. No, they do not fit that design specification. the design, in fact, as I understand it, was changed. The wet deck was lowered 3 feet. I think had they listened to Nigel G. and the other people who designed it a bit better, instead of our own AMH staff here that made certain decisions, part of that decision process was, how do we adjust the boat to fit the docks? Because I'd been very critical of them, saying, you've never been able to build a boat that fit a dock yet. Why would we expect this to be any different? And Bob Dahl and George Capacci's response to that was, they smiled at me, it's on your record here at the Finance Committee and also at Transportation, because that's where I asked the question. They smiled and said, don't worry about it, Senator Taylor. These boats will fit these docks. Well, we built a new dock to fit the boat in Whittier. We built a new dock to fit the boat in Valdez. We built a new dock to fit the boat in Cordova. Each of those were over $13 million apiece. That's $40 million bucks. You build a new dock now, and we're just completing it down Blind Slough in South Mitkoff, Petersburg. That dock, by the way, only fits a high-speed boat because it's built in water too shallow for any of your other boats to go in and out of there. 176 days a year, the tide is too low to allow our other boats to go in there. So that decision was made that committed us to not only building a new ferry dock for $13 million, but also to operating a boat designed for that dock, which was to be your third or fourth high-speed vessel. It's been our recommendation to the governor he not buy any more of these vessels at this time. So other design specs that were changed were rather interesting. And I know this rattles on too long, Mr. Chairman, but these boats were supposed to have fresh water on board, not only for washing your hands and having a drink, but also for domestic purposes, for sewer purposes. The manufacturer decided that was going to be too much weight to carry around. Change order occurs, and so they put saltwater flush on board. And you go, well, what difference does that make? Well, here's the difference it makes. Don Burford here in town, an old friend of mine, he shows up every night out at Auk Bay with a sewer pumping truck. And he pumps off roughly 3,000 gallons of sewage, saltwater sewage. He then transports that all the way from Auk Bay to the south end of Douglas Island. You kind of wonder, well, why did he go all the way through there? Because he pumps that into the sewer system, south end Douglas. The sewage then flows through Douglas, all the way up to the bridge, comes across the bridge, flows through Juneau, and out to the sewage treatment plant at Thane. They do it that way because they don't want 3,000 gallons of salt water to hit the Thane bugs in the tank all at one time because they think it might kill all the bugs that treat the sewer stuff. So by running it all that distance, that dilutes it enough so that you end up with not hurting the bugs. But can you imagine what that one is? I don't know what the numbers are on that contract, but every single night somebody's out there sucking sewage out of that boat and then driving 30-some miles so they can pump it off in a system. Well, our old boats, we've got MSDs on those boats. We have sewage treatment systems certified on those boats. They carry fresh water, and they use these systems to eliminate that problem. But both of these boats have to have some place to remove the sewage from them every night. That little change order has huge ramifications on operating costs, doesn't it? Another change order. They took the hard ramp off the boat. They were going to save 20,000 pounds by doing that. That way they could carry more cars. So that was another change order. Well, that meant that every one of your docks had to have that ramp on board it. So you rebuilt that for every place it was going to, instead of just having one on board the boat. Wet deck, as I mentioned, was another concern. The boats were designed, and it was alleged in the planning process, these boats would go scooting right through Sturgis Narrows at any tide. And in fact, we tried that. Our captains, who are personally liable, as I might add, as is management of a ferry system, the head of the New York ferry system is sitting in jail right now, you know, because they didn't do a good job of docking, didn't have a good safety plan, and they killed some people back there. So our folks don't want to go to jail, and we certainly don't want to hurt anyone. Our captains refuse to take that boat through Sergis Narrows at any time when the tide is running at more than 5.2 knots. So as a consequence, the boat that was originally designed and the people were told was going to be in Sitka, it's not in Sitka. It got moved to Juneau. And operating it between Juneau and Sitka, it can't operate on any tide, which means today we have to schedule the Fairweather's runs into Sitka to accommodate for that tidal flow. That was not supposed to be the case. And that, of course, constrains how you can operate and increases, once again, your operating cost, and it leaves your public not knowing what time that boat's going to leave, come to, or go from. That's too much, but that's some of the major highlights in design changes and modifications. Who's at fault? I don't care. These changes got made. We're living with them, and we're trying to figure out how to make these boats run as efficiently as we can.
And I think a lot of what you're talking about, you'll be repeating on Tuesday with the transportation committees.
Yes.
So if I could, to the committee, suggest we try to drill down on finances as much as we can. Let's see, Senator Stedman, did you have some more questions?
Go on.
Yep, go ahead, and then Senator Hoffman, then Senator Graham.
What I'd like to see sometime, and I think a couple of years ago was kind of hard to do with the system, but what I'd like to see is a financial statement on the Marine Highway system, just like you would have if you're looking at the water system in a community, or you're, you know, looking at any other type of enterprise funds at City Hall. So we can take a look at the overall picture of the Marine Highway system, and I don't think there's anybody in the state that's very familiar with highways that think that for a moment that the Marine Highway system is going to run at a positive cash flow. So I mean, that's not the point of the question. The point of the question is how bad of a quagmire we're dealing with, and if we could get some financial statements on it, including the upland costs, including the training, so it's like a standalone enterprise. And it's going to make it a lot easier, I think, to drill down, like you're saying, Mr. Chairman, and concentrate on the financial end of trying to deal with this so we can still provide a transportation system for the coastal communities.
Very short on that one. We can do that. We will provide you with it, and that's what Dick Leary has done. We have attempted to set up the accounting system on Marine Highways so that it is an enterprise fund accounting system.
Mr. Leary, any comments? To Senator Stedman?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, February's numbers are just firming up in the next 2-3 days here, and we're in the usual process of a monthly financial presentation. So, you know, if the committee would like something quicker than that, January's numbers would be available.
Mr. Leary, are you headquartered in Ketchikan?
Correct.
Robin, will he be here on Tuesday?
Yes.
Good. Okay. It'd be nice to meet him. Perhaps he could come up and just introduce himself to the Senate Finance folks.
You bet.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Anything, or Senator Stebbins, anything else?
No.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think I would like, in on side of that, to see what the ridership of Alaskans and outsiders are during the summer and during the winter to get a sense of who's actually benefiting by the Marine Highway system as well.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't know that anybody's ever really been able to nail that down very tightly. We can give you kind of general. We do a lot of demographic stuff. We ask people to fill out little cards and tell us where they're from and what they're doing, but that's not going to be a really firm number. But we have looked at that, and we can give you good approximations of what we estimate to be these numbers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you joined me in remembering the many lectures we had from Robin Taylor at this table regarding fast ferries, and before he was at this table, so I too join you in being amused at this current state. I can't help but wonder, though, if there is a point in time where we cut our losses and say, this is too much, this is ridiculous, we are far better off to put our resources in future in something else and not continue to try to bail out something that's not working. Thus far, I haven't heard one piece of good information about that makes me very encouraged. And generally, when you only hear, you know, skeptical comments and questions, things that raise questions, that's what's happening on the outside. And Lord knows what's happening underneath. And that, is there a bailout plan?
We have discussed that with the administration that feels the same way. This is, we've got to make a business decision here at some point in time. And what I've asked for on that is a little bit more patience. Let us go through this summer and let's make that decision next fall when we see what they have actually proven out to be. We've never had both of them operating on any kind of stable run for long enough. And I should be the last person probably suggesting this stuff, but with the investment you got in it and with the modifications you've made to other terminals and stuff, not to use them really puts you in a jam now. Because if you remove them, now you've got to start operating other boats, maybe at slower speeds and different schedules, but you've still got to provide some level of essential service there. There may not be enough volume or capacity for Lynn Canal, as an example, if you don't do it. Those are much more complex questions than just a simplistic answer from me would help you at this point. Is there a bailout plan? There really isn't. Because if you sell them, you have to reimburse the federal government for the difference. You have to first give them the feds back the money, but then you got to pay the difference between sales price and what they gave you to buy them. That could be very significant.
How many years does that take to?
I believe it's five. I believe we've got to do something with them for 5 years before you can surplus them out.
Excuse me.
That's just part of the problem. What do you do with them if you don't sell them? Do you just tie them up, put them on the beach? That's the current plan. Come next fall, we're going to tie them up and set them on a beach someplace because you can't afford to operate them in the winter, and they're kind of dangerous to operate in the winter. But is that the only alternative? Are there shoulder seasons that you could run where that boat might be a little less expensive to run than one of the other boats that carries more crew? Those are kind of difficult questions for right now. And what is the long-term plan? Right now, the long-term plan is about 6 months. And then let's sit down and decide, do we have to cut our, as through the chair, Senator Green said, do we have to cut our losses and make a business decision? I'm prepared to do that. But I don't want to do that and have somebody turn around and say, well, he never liked the boats anyhow. That decision should only be made based on good, hard, factual evidence of running experience, revenues, maintenance cost, and something that I ought to be able to, and if I can't provide it to you, somebody else, you ought to get somebody else to do it, because I ought to be required to give you a good, solid series of information and numbers so that you can look your constituents and the people of the state of Alaska in the eye and say, we gave them a fair trial, here's what it cost, and we had to make a decision. I don't think you're quite at that point yet, but I guarantee you, come next fall, you're going to be. Okay. This is $24 million a year in operating cost, not counting training cost, if you were to operate them year-round. That's a huge impact on this budget that we were here mm-hmm. to talk about in the first place.
Yeah. Senator Dyson?
Yeah. I am a boat enthusiast and understand how much of the world's commerce moves by sea and very efficiently. At some point, particularly in the winter and inclement weather, maybe our people are better served flying and hauling the cars and the boats and the freight by, you know, barge or slower, more capable vessels. Are you guys preparing the kind of information or keeping the kind of information that at some point would enable us to predict when we might be better off flying the people and or even subsidizing that rather than subsidizing the vessels, you know, with all the difficulties?
We have actually been doing that, Senator, and are.
Yeah. It should be a part of our long-term analysis to figure out how we get out of this
very expensive dilemma.
Well, as an example, had you not operated the Chiniga, we probably could have carried all those people by charter Learjet and moved their cars by Skycrane helicopter and saved money. I mean, if you actually look at what our real out-of-pocket costs were for moving each one of those people, it was pretty horrendous. But I don't know how relevant that may be to this committee. I mean,
yeah.
I can show you a whole series of different operations we have in Marine Highway where it's much more efficient to transport those people on barges, and it's much more efficient to fly them around than to operate the boat. But at the same time, that's the essential transportation system for that whole community. That's their economy you're talking about. And can you shift them all over to airplanes? I hear people complain, of course, and I hear it right away, when one of our boats breaks down. But, you know, Alaska Airlines had 5 different aircraft in the last 3 weeks. It couldn't maintain pressure in the air.
I was on one of them.
Yeah. I mean, you know what happens when the plane doesn't run? People get on board our boats. First thing that happens when a plane overflies and lands Ketchikan, Sitka, someplace else, the very first question of those people coming off that plane is, hey, is there a ferry going someplace? Can I get on that one? Many of our friends here have had to come back from Sitka in the fog on ferries, using high speed or even using one of our slow speed ferries.
Woody Salmon's asking the same question.
It's essential stuff.
Let's see, Senator Stebbins, then Senator Olson.
I just want to make a brief comment, if I could, Mr. Chairman. I do want to keep it on point, but I just don't, you know, there's a lot of employees that have worked very hard and are working very hard on the Marine Highway system and also are very concerned about the viability of it. And I wouldn't want to give them the impression that we're ready to pull the bilge plug and walk off the boat on the Marine Highway system. So, you know, we're going to work through this issue. And there are boats, the old Taku, the Malaspina, the Matanuska, the Columbia, that have served coastal communities of Alaska for many decades. And the biggest question is these two newer fast ferries. And the second layer down is the smaller Leconte class, Aurora class. And I think when we start looking down into this, we'll find that there is areas that work better than others.
Good point, Senator Stedman. The reason we're spending this time and the time is going to be spent on Tuesday is to not take the easy way out. And, let's see, somebody else had a hand up. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Taylor, I got the impression from Richard Leary and some of your comments that there weren't any financial flow sheets from the past performances of the Marine Highway system as compared to what they are now before you, after you've taken over. Is that?
Oh, no, that's not accurate.
Okay. as long as I know that's the only
question. No, there have always been methods of allocating cost and expense and providing for revenue reflection within this system. But they were carried in about 6 or 7 different aspects. There was administration, there was shoreside operations, as you asked, there was reservations there. I mean, and they were carried as different component parts. What we have done through this process is take those existing numbers and bring them into an enterprise fund type approach so that whether it's my salary or somebody else's, that is reflected as part of the overall operating cost of that boat. That's how enterprise funds do it, and primarily we couldn't answer the question of how many dollars you bring in through the cash box, how many dollars does it cost to run? And unless you're going to allocate back, you can't answer that question per vessel. We've now done that, so that now we have allocated cost. As an example, our cost of insurance, which is done through our own self-insurance risk management, that amount of money is now allocated back against each of the vessels, because that's what we're really insuring. And obviously the Columbia is going to require a bigger insurance premium than the little Lituya sitting over here with only carrying 18 cars, and the Columbia is carrying 130. So we have allocated those expenses too and used kind of business approaches to how you go about doing that. And that's why Dick Leary now is available and can give you that kind of a view. But had you asked the same question a year ago, yes, those numbers were still there, but they were found in different segments of the budget.
Thank you, Senator, on that question. I got another comment I'd like to have, and that is certainly as we look at the numbers that are here and the pessimistic or at least my conclusion is a fairly pessimistic picture that I'm seeing. I'd like to know from the end user, the person that's sitting out in Senator Stedman's constituency, what effect the fast ferry has on their life. Has it dramatically changed compared to the old Latoya class types or something like that? Certainly our responsibility is financial. But I still would like to hear, I guess, from the end user what their ideas are on fast ferries.
If I could, I can tell you we have had wonderful response from the people. Everybody loves them. I've never not met one person that rode that boat that didn't just think it was wonderful to be able to get from Sitka, as an example, in half the time. And what they would all like to have is it running more frequently on a regular schedule just to their town. That would be wonderful. And the real cost is at some point. You have to look and reflect upon expense in that process. See, both British Columbia and the state of Washington attempted to do the same thing. And their people love those high-speed boats, too. They thought they were really wonderful. There aren't any of those that are now operating today. They all went broke.
Mr. Chairman, certainly the convenience factor is something that's important, but I was looking at Mark from the effect of this business wouldn't be able to stay in business unless he had the fast ferry running because of the amount of speed that it would take to get either his commodity to market or put inventory on a shelf.
We haven't encountered that yet because they haven't been operating long enough for people to be that reliant upon that speed, and they are used to an existing system as best you can get used to our system.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's the best answer I can give you, Senator.
Other questions, comments? I had, Senator.
Just a brief one. Just go ahead. Just to add to Senator Taylor's comments, although I haven't ridden on those boats when they've been underway, everybody I've talked to that's ridden on them really like them. They're comfortable, they're fast. The two people, the issue is the entity paying the bill, of course. And then the other negative aspect is if you happen to be in a skiff and one of them goes by you, because they throw one heck of a wake out. Even though they said when they were going to run them, it didn't happen. It wouldn't happen. But let me tell you, when you're in a skiff and you're out hunting and one of those boats go by you, you know, and it's winter, you're damn careful you don't swamp. So, I mean, but that's another issue that's off of the table. But there's only two entities, I guess, that have indigestion. The guy in the skiff and the guy at the finance table paying the bill, or the state paying the bill.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, and similarly, this pattern of a problem for the High Street Ferry, we're not following new ground. British Columbia went through the same thing in the same waters you went through. They were going to be the high-speed ferry building capital of the world and going to solve all their problems, and they found out the boats couldn't handle the sea state and the wake damage all along both shorelines and to recreational boaters, literally, and they ended up selling them on eBay, what, 10 cents on the dollar or 15, as I remember. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. If I might, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to go back and maybe not correct, but at least probably give a better explanation on my comments about Lynn Canal. Right now, within 2 weeks, you're going to have concluded about a 10 or 12 year EIS process, because we anticipate the record of decision coming down on the Juneau Access Road. The comments I was making about utilizing Berners Bay are that it's going to take, assuming that the litigation doesn't stop it, I'm anticipating there will be litigation on that, but assuming the litigation does not stop that project, it's going to be 5 to 7 years before I can operate ferries on behalf of this system out of the Katsahine River, which is the preferred alternative destination of the road at this point. That's a point almost directly across the canal from Haines. At that point in time, we'd be operating at least two shuttle ferries off the end of that road, one that would take you about 5 miles across to Haines, the other one that would run from Katsahine River on up to Skagway, and, of course, make it a little triangle route coming back. These are short runs, but they need to have a ferry of probably 60 to 70 car capacity that'll do about 16, 17 knots, so it can go back and forth on a regular and timely basis. The vessel that I was talking about that I'm hoping to let a contract on sometime this spring would be that vessel. But we would operate, I would hope, first out of Auk Bay to Haines because those facilities exist. And then if we could get a temporary terminal in Berners Bay to operate, it would cut the run in half. You could make twice as many runs in a day. The eventual build-out on that at about, say, 2010, 2012, somewhere in that region, you'd be operating out of the Katsuhine River. But that's why I'm so concerned that we design a vessel that will work in Lynn Canal and will work as that shuttle, a drive-on, drive-off boat, not one that has to turn corners and stuff. That's what we're going to try to do. And we're going to try and replicate that boat so that we can maybe base a boat in Hoonah instead of having the people of Hoonah only get one vessel twice a week. Maybe they could have their own little Latuya, so to speak, that runs back and forth daily, and maybe it could show a 90% of cost return back to you instead of the Lakani, which is today costing over $250,000 a week and bringing in revenues similar to what Chenega did. I mean, Lakani is one of our biggest loss leaders because there's not a lot of revenue out there and people moving back and forth, and it's because they can't. They come into Juneau, they're stuck for 2-3 days, 4 days, before they can make it back home again. Hotel bill alone is going to eat their lunch. So what do? They fly. So if I can get that shuttle operation working in the first place that we've targeted to do it at Lynn Canal, it can have major impacts. But there's nothing that's cheaper to run than a road. And that's why I started these comments off. It is so desperate that we have tight coordination between DOT roads and DOT marine highways, and that we build the road between Cake and Petersburg. It needs 5 lousy miles of additional road, and you'd connect them up. Then you run to one terminal, not two. Those people can make it to the dentist. They don't have to wait for a week before they can leave town. 1.2 miles at the bottom of Wrangell Island would get day shuttle back and forth between Wrangell, Ketchikan, which would connect up Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan, and with that little bit of a road, it would connect up Cake, too. I mean, those are huge savings and cost efficiencies over operating a boat. Basically, we're operating a system today identical to what Alaska Steam had 70 years ago. Boat pulls out of Puget Sound every week. Where's it go? Stops at every port, goes all the way to Skagway, goes all the way back to Puget Sound. That's what they were running 70 years ago. We haven't changed any. And we've got to get down to these efficient little shuttle runs that'll start feeding that mainline system, because you're still going to need some mainliners. But we need those shuttles to feed it. And you can't run a shuttle if you're going to run town to town, because you can't afford to run 160-some miles. That's our dilemma, and I wanted to clarify that part about Berners Bay, because people will try to use or misuse those comments to their benefit, but as a practical matter, the road exists to Berners Bay today. We should have a temporary ferry terminal seated out there today, which would cut our operation cost significantly in the canal. Eventually, we're going to have a road. Hopefully, I would like to see it run all the way to Skagway. But politics has slowed that down a bit, so now it goes to the Katsuhine. The Katsuhine alone would mean you'd end up with just two little shuttles sitting at the end of the canal instead of every mainline boat going all the way up and back. Every boat going up and back takes 16 to 18 hours with a crew of, 50-some people working 24 hours a day to go up there. It just makes no sense. That's why a road is so important, and we're all very hopeful that they're going to get permission to go forward and build that Juneau Access Road to that point. It makes huge differences to the marine highway system if they do.
All right. Other questions, comments? I had a couple. Robin, when you cut the rate 30%, your revenues did what and your ridership did what?
Ridership went up fleet-wide 48%. On the Columbia, we're actually beating that. Revenues went up 18%. That's net return to the system.
So gross revenues up 18?
Mm-hmm.
Gross revenue plus 18.
That's for winter traffic. We're talking
winter traffic. So that would be October to date, October to the end of January. Revenue plus 18.
We actually initiated that, Mr. Chairman, November 3rd was when it started. But the driver rides free program, which they had done traditionally in the past, that started October 1st. We're hoping this next year to change that and move that full 30% up to the first part of October. We think it'll help.
For those 3 months, gross revenue increased 18%. Headcount, total ridership increased 48?
That 48 that I'm giving you is a units of sale number. It's both ridership, stateroom purchases, and car deck space, because we discounted all of them.
Okay. How do you measure, obviously you measure profit and loss. How do you measure, a headcount on the system? Obviously people get on and off a ferry when they land at a certain place. Do you count how many people are getting on and off, average person per port?
We do it port to
average vehicle per port? Okay.
Yes. We actually have flow numbers port to port. Some of that, as you can imagine, gets a bit confused if you have a person get off, spend a few days, and come back on again. We have pretty accurate numbers when it comes to flow through and port to port. And we report those every year. We've got that in the book.
So could we get that maybe on Tuesday? You'd have to report something like that.
I didn't bring my copy.
I mean, it's sort of a gross top of the thumb look, but I mean, I would think that the number of people getting on and off should be increasing. Number of vehicles getting on and off should be increasing.
Right.
Okay. So okay, that's
what it dramatically shows you, Mr. Chairman, is how few people you're actually moving on some runs.
That'd be interesting to see.
That's when you got to start really scratching your head about what level of service should we be providing here, since we don't seem to be building any.
Talk a little bit more. I remember the Inter-Island Ferry System maybe a few years ago, and didn't we fund a boat?
Yes.
And that's separate and apart from the Marine Highway System, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and how is that working, and does that model apply to some other places in Southeast Alaska? Could that be duplicated?
I believe it not only could be duplicated, I believe it will be if we continue to stumble and halter and not move forward with our existing system, because people will turn to other systems that are more efficient. And today, that system is efficient because it's doing what every planner has told us to do with this system for years. Take a run, promise people you'll leave at 10 in the morning and you'll come back at 2 in the afternoon, and you'll provide them a decent fare structure, and they will show up. That system is doing that. It operates a vessel right now from Hollis in the morning over to Ketchikan. It then lays at our dock for about 3 to 5 hours, and then it goes back to Hollis. That system is trying to operate out of the fare box. We've had to pay the funding that you talk about, as we've done, that funding actually came from the federal government, and we were the pass-through agency on it. And we passed it through to them. And we have assisted them in every way we can by letting them utilize our docks basically for free and utilize some of our facilities so that they could tie their boats up. And they've got one boat they're operating now. They're going to receive another boat that will be doing its sea trials here in Southeast Alaska, I believe, next month. In late March or early April, and I think it starts up service shortly after that. So it's called the Stikeen, and it'll be operating out of Kaufman Cove, where we just built a brand new terminal. And that will operate Kaufman Cove, Wrangell, and then over to the Blind Slough Terminal, because that boat is shallow enough draft, it can go in and out of that terminal. They're only planning, though, on operating that boat 4 days a week for 4 months this next year. Well, you can't leave those communities without any service for 8 months.
So basically, we're going to be providing, in essence, duplicative service between Wrangell-Petersburg.
So those routes that aren't, that are grossly unprofitable, can we pick up that model, the inter-island ferry model, and put it on those routes to supplant marine highway system participation?
I think you could, but I don't know that you would want to do that, because you've got an overall system that you need to run. And it's almost like a telephone system. You know, it'd be nice if we could only have the big trunk lines, and we'll make these other guys carry the load on those ones that don't pay. I think there is a certain public service and essential transportation system service that is necessary for the legislature to play a role in. Otherwise, you end up with just arbitrary decisions being made, like, oh yeah, we'll give you ferry service, but for 4 days a week and 4 months out of the year. The rest of the time, hold your breath, you know. I don't think that works. What the model that really is proving itself, and I've used both the IFA as an example and the Lituya, the model that proves itself is base the boat in the community that needs to travel. And our demographics show us that if you take a smaller community, almost 100% of the people, as an example, living in Hoonah want to or need to during the year come to Juneau. But there aren't 100% of the people living in Juneau that need to go to Hoonah. Previous planners had thought hub and spoke. You base the boat in Juneau and you let it run out to Hoonah once in a while. Wrong. Lituya has proven that to be backwards. You base the boat in the community where the people need to come to town. It takes them in the morning, it brings them home in the evening, ties up to the dock, and everybody goes home, sleeps with their own family instead of sleeping on board a boat. And to try and compare that model with the current infrastructure and equipment you've got, we're running a 50-crew boat, or Lakati's 24 crew. We're running a 24-crew boat into a community twice a week, where we might be taking five people, we might be taking two people. But if that community had a boat that would go back and forth every day, maybe it'd be carrying things like the little Oral Freeman does in Ketchikan. The scariest statistic that you should have today, the Oral Freeman, which only goes to their airport, remember, no other function, it carries over 100,000 people more than my entire marine highway fleet carries in a year. It does it with two people, two crew members, with a boat that costs about $2 million when they got it delivered. And that boat was built in Alaska, interestingly enough, too.
Is there, some of our mainliners have been helped or built by federal money. Is there other federal money available for us to replace our aging fleet?
Yes. There is, and usually we have gotten that through earmarks by going specifically to the congressional delegation. But we also have funding through that is now available because the language was modified in TLU to allow us to utilize SHACWAC funds for both marine vessels, terminals, and now it says, and roads that connect there too. So we may even be able to now bring both the roads and the marine highway program together a bit on that funding source to utilize it to extend roads to ferry terminals. But yes, that's where our funding has always come from on these vessels. I shouldn't say always. I think the
are there plans to access that federal money for new ships, smaller, as you call them, shuttle ships?
Yes, the SHACWAC fund that we've already received within, I believe, though it was supposed to come out yesterday. I think it's there. There's about $13.5 million in there for the construction of that shuttle vessel that I hope to contract out this spring. And that's SHACWAC money.
Do you have a system of distributed reservations? And by that I mean, if I'm in Fairbanks and operating a RV park, can I access and sell your services to somebody that's traveling south?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
But as our good friend Steve Frank would tell you, and Linda Anderson, They were one of the first to install one of our computer systems. It was very expensive, it was cumbersome, and we didn't have a system that worked very well. I think we've made some major changes in our reservation system. You sitting at your house, hopefully within in the next 2-3 months, we've done this already on the Pelican Run, the Laconia Run, Pelican. You can sit in your house, call up on the web, our web page. You can make a reservation, you can purchase the ticket, and I'm hoping very soon that you'll be able to hit your print button and, just like with Alaska Airlines, print out a ticket at your house. We did this experimentally last summer. It worked well on that limited run. We are hoping to initiate that. We're going to bring on, we were going to bring on first the high speed running up Lynn Canal here at the end of the month, and then every 2 weeks after that, we'd bring another boat on, and hopefully by the time summer got here, the entire fleet would be on that. You'd be able to print out a ticket at your house. So yes, anybody that wanted to, like with an RV park, if they wanted to assist people in doing that, it'd be very easy to do so.
Did they get a commission to do that? Is there some incentive for them to push?
There was. I think the folks I'm referring to, I think they eventually gave that up because it was too much effort and too much cost. We do have contracts with travel agents. There's the term I was thinking of.
Yeah, the folks that whisper in my ear tell me that it was working just fine, and then sometime, some years ago, the whole system was changed, and it became so cumbersome that it wasn't worth the 5 or 10%. But they said they sold a lot of trips. People that had driven the Alcan and thought they were going to drive back decided it was a lot further than they thought it was and wanted to get on the ferry.
We're really encouraging that, and as you can imagine, that's something I've been working on. And I've got a wonderful staff that just needed a little guidance, a little direction there. Actually, I don't know that gave any guidance or direction. I just really encouraged them to do what they've been wanting to do out there for years. And we've got a guy named John Garish out there that's doing a terrific job for us. And we're also working with, we've got offers of assistance and have been using some of these folks out of private sector. Even Alaska Airlines people have been very kind about helping us. I think we're going to have a dynamic website up and going by this summer. That's my prayer. So that you ought to be able to go on and literally hit a button and call up. And you can, most of this you can do right now. You can hit a button and call up, say you want to know all the boats that are leaving from and arriving in Juneau for the next month. You can hit a button and it'll print right out on your printer. And it's a calendar and it'll show you each boat, when it's coming and going, what time. You can then hit another page and make a reservation on that boat and buy your tickets on that boat. And hopefully within a short period of time, you can print them out at your house. We're selling a significant portion now of our tickets over that website, and we've got to get further updated on it.
What fuel do you use? What's is it? Bunker C, Hago in your mainliners? Do you know?
I wish I had Jim Beadle here. I think it's number two diesel.
Is it okay? And are you able to have the cash? Are you able to hedge any of that? Does it help? Have you played in that?
Well,
maybe that's a Tuesday question.
I think it is. What we purchase under right now is the Opus price, which is fixed out of Seattle, and then we pay a delivery cost depending upon the port that we're in. Some of those delivery costs can run as high as 16, 17 cents a gallon. But we basically get the best price we can out of Opus. I think there may have been some attempts at hedging in the past where we purchased a quantity up front at a fixed price. I'm not familiar enough with that to answer that question as to how we might be able to do that in the future. It's a risky business. You might buy at a price and then have the bottom drop out on the price too.
Is the Opus price a price that's publicly posted?
Yes.
Is there a website you could refer me to? Some, I don't have to do it now, but I'd like to
Mr. Chairman, I believe you need to be signed up for that particular service, but we can give you the information on how to accomplish.
Would you do that? I'd like to see that for another purpose.
I can actually get you something probably even more helpful, because we've done tracking on those OPIS prices for several years, and we can give you spreadsheets on the whole thing as to where it's been, what it looks like now, and where it's going to, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Dick, can you do that and get that up to Gary?
Yes, we can do that.
Good. And it's not in relation to the Marine Highway, but you know the mainliners coming in at Anchorage we're paying 16% fuel surcharge for everything coming into Anchorage now, and the Tote and Horizon seem to want to hide the peanut, so it's nice to be able to find out what they're paying for Bunker C. I'd like to know.
So, oh yeah,
because it's an extraordinary tax that they put on Alaskans, and they just sort of bury it, and they don't have any competition, so we all pay it. But that's a whole other subject for a whole other day.
Well, on finances, we do charge a 10% surcharge for fuel right now. Didn't reduce that.
Have you run into ice problems in Prince William Sound with the Chenega?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
And we have specifically designed the routes with the Coast Guard's assistance to avoid ice as best we can. It makes a much more sweeping turn than what the Aurora does as it goes through.
Is built into this budget, and you spoke earlier, we wanted to talk about it today, that $500,000 last year that was sort of the leap of faith to try to market the system better and to try to drive sales and profit. Is built into your increase this year a continuation of that effort?
I'm not sure if it's within, there's two different base budgets we're working with, yours and the House's. I believe it's included.
Maybe the question is, are you going to continue that effort?
I would sure recommend it, yes.
And you spoke earlier of its success? Okay.
I actually believe we're going to enhance revenues more than what we predicted. Yeah. And I think it, with a little more structuring of routes and hopefully better utilization of equipment in the future, you're going to see significant shifts in that revenue picture. Okay.
Mr. Leary, before we close, anything else from you?
Mr. Chairman, no. I'll just get ready for Tuesday's meeting.
I would look forward to meeting you on Tuesday. Anything else from the committee? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You've been a strong proponent during this presentation about some of the cost difficulties that has been met here, and then a proponent for the Juneau Access Road. How do you deal with the opposition to the road coming out of Skagway from people either from Haines or Skagway, or for people from Juneau for that matter? My office has been contacted by certainly a number of people that were opposed to that and were concerned that some of the activities that were going on to go down this way had already been authorized and were fairly troubled by it.
Well, the way I deal with that is my goal is to run the most efficient ferry system we can have that will provide the greatest level of service for the least cost. And this is a number that has been worked on by DOT for several years, and that's to try and figure out what does it cost to carry a car and a passenger on our ferry for 1 mile. What does it cost the state? And the other question then is, what does it cost the state to maintain a road? Well, the differential is it costs about a penny a mile if you're going down a road for the state to plow it, grade it, repaint it once in a while, fix chuck holes. It costs $2 minimum. I believe the number today with increased fuel costs should be probably closer to $2.50 per mile to carry that same person on a ferry. So it's a 250-to-1 ratio of actual cost to the people of the state of Alaska to operate a road or operate a ferry. And I think you can get into better ratios than that by running more efficient ferries, as I've indicated. It's probably not a fair number when you look at all the traffic running in and out of Anchorage every day and out to Wasilla, and try and compare that to some little rural road in southeast Alaska. So, but that's the numbers I've been given, and as I told the people in Skagway, I've never met a road I didn't like. I've walked through enough brush in my life that, you know, a road really was pretty comfortable compared to stomping your way through the brush. So, And the cost of operating a boat, the cost of operating an airplane is astronomical compared to just driving down a road. Roads have to be our future. But any idiot that looks at a map knows you can't build bridges to every single island in Southeast. These are huge distances. You get up to the point of 5, 6, 7 mile crossings, you can't build that bridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So we need roads and ferries both.
Anything else from the committee? I guess when we, as we close, thanks committee for their participation. This is my 8th year in finance, and I think I'm pretty close. When I came here, the subsidy to the marine highway system was $32 million. And today we're looking at a little over $82 million. And I look at the demographics of Southeast. It's not growing for all sorts of reasons, most of them bad. I look at the airfare trade-off that we've talked about. People are flying instead of driving. And I look at the cruise ships that we talked about. And I think, Robin, you're exactly right. Why we're spending this time is because we're at a crossroads and what we're going to do with this $80-plus million subsidy and how we're going to control it. So I appreciate the committee's participation, you for being here today. And we look forward to talking more on Tuesday. Our task is to get you through 06 and deal with 07, and we know that. And so we're going to work hard on that. Help next week to move us forward. Senator Green, thanks for moving that bill out, and we'll do that the next time around. Anything else come for the committee? Okay, where is your? Senator Green.
Tomorrow morning, bills previously heard, including Senate Bill 3, and the meeting previously scheduled in here tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. It was joint with Senate Resources, is canceled. Okay. The Saturday meeting time will be announced tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, anything else? All right, thanks everybody. We're adjourned.